Good evening, everyone. Great to see you all here. Lots of different, it's a big mix of people today from all sorts of backgrounds, different religious backgrounds, different ethnic backgrounds, different countries, different ages. And so that's just wonderful to see such a mixed group here. My name is Sam. So I'm one of the pastors here at this church, and I look after this evening congregation, and there's an 8 a.m. service that's a very traditional church style. There's a morning family service, this evening service is particularly popular with young people, so we hope that you feel welcome tonight, and there's a dinner afterwards that everyone's welcome to join us for. And gosh, it smells good. I hope that's not too distracting for you while we're having our discussions and questions and hearing the talks. But the first one, so we've been looking at it over the last few weeks about making sense of God. How do we make sense of God? And we've been trying to connect God to some of the big questions that many people ask in our culture today. So, well, hasn't science disproved Christianity? What about social justice? And tonight we're going to be looking at perhaps the biggest question of our day and age. We're going to be looking at the issue of identity. Who am I? And why do I matter? So I hope it's helpful. This first talk will go for 7 minutes exactly, and then there'll be a question for you. So let me start. We're going to be talking about the this first part looks at searching for the real you. Okay, that's the title of the talk, searching for the real you. So let me ask you this question to start. How do I know who the real me is? How do I know who the real me is? Who am I and why do I matter? Now, maybe you're a confident person, and deep down you just have an intuitive feeling that you do matter. Perhaps you can't explain why, but you're sure it's true. You know that you're important. You know you're valuable. And you know you matter in life. But perhaps you're not like that. You're not a confident person. If you're like me, I'm an introvert, so I never feel confident. And so you're not convinced that you matter at all. Perhaps there's been other people in your life who have said words that have just stuck with you. Perhaps they've told you you're useless, or you're a waste of space. Or maybe it hasn't come from someone else, it's just come from you. Some of us can be our own harshest critics. And we just don't feel that valuable or important. Now, whether we're a confident person or not so much of a confident person, we all want it to be true, don't we? We all want to matter. We all want to know we matter. We're all searching for meaning and significance in life. And so we're trying to work out, all of us, who we are and where we fit. Now, whether you realize it, whether you're conscious of it or not, the world is full of voices telling us who we are and who we should be. Sorry, are we getting a bit of ringing? Or is that just me? The world is full of voices telling us who we are and who we should be. There's lots of people right throughout our lives, so sometimes it's our parents or grandparents. I know many of my friends from Asian backgrounds, they know that they feel the weight of that family pressure. Then as we grow up, there's our teachers, or perhaps we're a sporty person, and it's our coaches. Other times it's our friends or our definitely not friends. Then there's all those voices, the many, many, many on social media, shouting at us through our feeds. And so whether we notice it or not, we're constantly hearing and listening to the voices of others, defining who we are, who we should be. And as we listen, we can't help but they have an impact on us. They have an impact on how we see ourselves. Let me give you some examples. I think, one of the common ways that we hear these voices of others is in the way we look for significance about who we are and why we matter. We look for significance in how we look. You see, sometimes for some of us, we can focus our life on being beautiful, being thin, being athletic, being fashionable. But what happens when we define ourselves, who we are, by how we look, by our body image? Well, I'm sure that there's many people in this room that will be able to tell you that it can mess with your head. Because stop and think about it. How do we work out if we look good or not? Well, it's by comparing ourselves to others. Now, these days, it's not just your immediate circle of friends or that you have to compare yourself to know whether you look good or not, but we've now got social media where there's millions of people to compare ourselves to. And so in the morning as we roll out of bed, well, it's no wonder we feel unattractive and insecure when we're comparing ourselves to perfectly posed and edited and filtered online photos. Now, for others, it's maybe you don't care how you look. These days, I don't really care. I'll dress up in my tradie clothes. Even to go out, I sometimes drive my kids to school in my dressing gown. And I just put this black thing over the top. Sometimes, though, it's still open and I don't really care if people can see me. But maybe you're a different type of person and you base your significance, who you are and where you fit and why you matter, on something else. You base it on some other meaningful achievement. And so for you, perhaps you find your identity in your work. Perhaps your parents have told you, well, they put that pressure on you that you should become a doctor or a successful businesswoman. Perhaps your teacher or your coach has told you that you can do anything. You just need to believe in yourself. And so you're now aiming to win a gold medal at the Olympics. Maybe you're not an athlete, but for you, it's something different. You've dedicated your whole life to curing a disease or releasing an album, writing a book, or serving a charity to save the world. Now, these are all good and worthwhile goals. Don't mishear me. But the point is, well, if we count on our work or achievements to make us feel important and valuable and worthwhile, then we're setting ourselves up for failure. Sorry, for disappointment, I should say. We're setting ourselves up for disappointment. Because, you see, well, if we fail to achieve our goal, then it'll leave us crushed. But even if we reach our goal and we win the prize, we top the class, the problem is that no achievement lasts forever. There's always the next race, the next class, the next prize. And so your new achievement quickly becomes an old one. And so you, if you've defined yourself by this achievement, are now a has-been. And so the problem is, trying to find your worth, your value, your identity and your work and achievements is that you can never rest. You have to keep working. You have to keep striving. You have to keep stressing to prove yourself. And so I look around, not only as a doctor, but as someone who's now interested in cult, thinking about culture. And it's no wonder that we have record levels of stress and anxiety, is it? How many people these days struggle with depression and burnout? Now, it's not that beauty or work or achievements are bad. It's just that none of these are a solid or stable or permanent enough to build our whole lives on. That's the point. It's not that they're bad. It's just that none of them are stable or solid or permanent enough to build our whole lives on, our whole worth, our whole identity. And so if we trust in any of these sorts of things to show us who we are and why we matter, then we're going to end up disappointed, anxious, and exhausted. Now it's your turn. We're going to break up for a few minutes into small groups. You can choose your own groups of, you know, 2, 3, 4, however many, and just you can join in as you feel comfortable. You can say a little or say a lot or you can say nothing. And there's going to be a question. So having just heard that listening to others and how they want to define you, is there a better way? I want you now to think about the next step. Well, if listening to others doesn't work, what about listening to yourself? And so the question that will come up on the screen will be, imagine a friend says to you, well, you want to know who you are? You want to work out your, discover your identity? Well, then be true to yourself. Follow your heart. What would you say? How would you respond? All right, I'll give you, so break up into a few minutes. We'll play some music in the background. And I want you to think about that question. And Sibben will be timing. Where's Sibben? Yep, you got the stopwatch going. Great. And I'll get back up in a few minutes. Well, I'll get you to turn back this way. We're now going to move from the first talk, which was about finding the true you and listening to others. And we're going to think about this line, be true to yourself. So as we've seen, there's many voices in the world, the voices of others telling us who we are and who we should be. But perhaps I think a more common and explicit way that voice this day, these days, isn't the voice to listen to others, but actually the more common way for people these days is to listen to yourself, to listen to your heart, to follow your heart. And so in other words, whenever we hear that line, follow your heart, people are saying the way to find out who you are, to find out your true self, is to look inside yourself. The way to know who you are is by what you feel. The way to find meaning and happiness in life is by being true to yourself, to trust your internal instincts, to trust your intuition, your emotions, your heart. And so the best way to make decisions in life is to base it on what feels right. And so you need to figure out what you feel most deeply and what you want most desperately. And once you figure that out, you need to go for it with everything you've got. If you want to find happiness in life, then you need to know this and then express it. Express yourself. Express the true you. You need to live for yourself and not be molded, not be squashed by the voices of others. You see, in our culture, trusting your own internal instincts is seen as a positive thing. But conformity to outside voices, external views, is a negative thing. And so to be true to yourself, then, you need to strip away all those layers of conformity which are imposed on you by the culture and by society, and be free to be yourself. Now, in our culture, this belief that the way to discover who you are is, you know, by listening to yourself and following your heart, it goes almost unchallenged. No one questions it. In fact, it's just like the new secular religion. And if you do question or do oppose or disagree, it's almost like a new heresy. But I want us here tonight to just pause and think about if this belief, this new secular religion, actually works in everyday life for us as individuals or for our society as a whole. See, stop and think for a minute. Well, who is the real me? Who is the who to whom I must be true? You see, what happens if my feelings, my inside internal emotions, what if they conflict? What if on the one hand I think, well, yes, no, I feel I should study and I should work hard. That's good. That's right. But then I have a even deeper, stronger internal desire. What my heart wants to do is just lie on the couch and play the Xbox. See, should I really be true to my heart and be lazy? Or, so that's if our feelings conflict. But what about if our feelings, or what about if our feelings change over time? I mean, on the 1st of January every year, I think, right, we've got a New Year's resolution. This year I'm going to get fit and healthy, and I go for a run. A month later, though, by the 1st of February, all I want to do again is lie on the couch and eat pizza. Sometimes it's not even day by day or month by month, but just year by year. Think about it. What did you want when you were 8 years old? Lollies. And so, should I be true to the 8 year old me who wants lollies? Or should I be true to the 18 year old me who wants a romantic relationship? Or should I be true to the 28 year old me and be chasing in my life money and possessions? Or should I be true to the 48-year-old me? I'm not there yet. Who wants power? Who wants power and influence? You see, which Sam Goff should I be true to? Who's the real me? Who am I? It's very hard to build your identity on feelings that can change on a whim. It's very hard to build your whole life. Define yourself, build your identity on something that's constantly in flux. You see, if I'm constantly changing, well, to which self must I be true? The problem is the answer to the question, who am I? The question, who am I, never has a definitive answer. As soon as you answer that question, it changes. But there's another problem with this way of thinking. This way of thinking of trying to work out who we are by listening to ourselves on the inside. Again, pause and think. Do I really want everyone in the world to be true to themselves? Do we want the arson to follow his heart and light fires? What about the sporting hero, like Lance Armstrong, who won more Tour de France's than any other cyclist in history, but yet was eventually discovered to have been cheating with drugs all along? But yet wasn't he just following his heart to his greatest desire for victory and fame? Do we really want everyone to be true to themselves? What about the brutal dictators? Aren't they just acting on what their heart, aren't they just following their heart? Now you might say, well, Sam, it's a bit more nuanced than that. Yeah, it's be true to yourself. We should be true to ourselves, but as long as no one else gets hurt. But even that, think about it. Does even that work in everyday life? Does that work in practice? You see, what if someone's not hurt or harmed, but they're upset? What about if, think about the person that barges in front of you in the queue? Or what about if, when people, they can't even agree if it's hurtful and harmful? You see, for example, think about, I don't know if any of you have heard of a tennis great. She was a champion. Her name was Martina Navratilova. She won Wimbledon about 9 times or something phenomenal back in the 80s. And now Martina happens to be a lesbian, and she's been a gay rights campaigner. She's also come out recently and argued that it's not fair for women if trans women compete in women's sports. But yet trans activists have then criticised her and said, well, those comments are just transphobic. And so what happens, I've given you an example of between a gay rights and a women's campaigner, And trans activists, what happens when there's a clash between two groups? You see, who gets to be true to themselves? And who doesn't? When both claim they're being true to themselves and accusing the other of being phobic, then what do we do? So now I'm going to give you a few more minutes in your groups. So you started the question, you started thinking about how would you respond if someone says, be true to yourself, follow your heart. I want us to continue your conversation now with reflect on some of the things you're perhaps thinking or saying with this question that will come up on the screen. If everyone does be true to themselves and follow their hearts, well, would it create a happy and healthy society? So have a think. Have you changed your mind about what you just said before? Or do you still think the same thing? So I'm going to give you about 4 or 5 more minutes now, and then we'll come back for the last and final talk from me. So I hope that was a fruitful discussion. So in talk one, we learnt that, well, what I argued was that trying to find our identity, our self-worth, in other people's approval, in other people's opinions, is a roller coaster ride of anxiety. In talk two, I've argued that listening to ourselves, our deepest feelings, is also a dead end. Because what about when our feelings contradict each other, or they change, or they're unhealthy? So if we can't listen to other people, we can't listen to ourselves for ultimate answers, well, who do we listen to? Well, there's one more angle that we haven't considered. And that is, well, it's up on the screen, you've already got it, at listening to God. Have you ever thought about who God says you are? Who does God say I am? Who does God say I am and why I matter? Well, as we turn to the Bible, we've only got to read the first page, the first chapter, to learn our deepest and truest identity and the significance of our lives, why we matter, why we're valuable. You see, if we're going to be truly true to ourselves, then the Bible says that we need to be true to God's design for us. You see, think about it. What are you made for? What is a human for? Think about an illustration for a moment. What's a knife for? And think about, what's a spoon for? Now, if you use either of those things for the wrong purpose, they won't work. A spoon won't cut. A knife won't scoop. That's what a knife is for, to cut. That's what a spoon is for, to scoop. But what is a human for? Well, the first chapter of the Bible tells us that as humans, we're not an accident. We're not a mistake. We're not just a random collection of chemicals. But we're actually made for a purpose. The first chapter of the Bible tells us that each one of us, that you and I, were made in the image of God. You're made in the image of God. Now, the point of an image is to show what the original looks like. It's to reflect it, to represent it. And so you might be here, someone here today that is a not so confident person and that you feel like you're a waste of space, that you're not valuable, that you're not important, that you don't matter. But I want you to hear, the Bible says that God disagrees with you. You see, God created you to represent Him, to reflect Him in the universe. God made you to know Him and to experience His incredible love and then to reflect that to know other people and to show His love to those around you in this world. And so the way to truly be true to yourself, according to the Bible, is to love God and love others. You're made in the image of God, and that's why you matter. Think about how different that is to, it's the opposite of the message of the world we hear around us, that we're to look on the inside and live for ourselves. But if we're a Christian, if we're a follower of Jesus, there's something even more amazing. You see, not only do we have the privilege of being made in the image of God, but we also have the privilege of knowing God's unconditional love as His children. Listen to this verse from the Bible. It says, God speaking to Christians. It says, "You are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation." Get this, God's special possession. That's what you are. You're God's treasured possession. You see, the opinion that matters the most in life isn't other people's opinions, or isn't even your opinion of yourself, but it's God's opinion. And if you follow Jesus, then God says today to you, "I've chosen you to be my special and treasured possession, my own child." So who am I and why do I matter? Well, I'm made in God's image. I've been chosen as His special and treasured possession, His very own child. And so the world's full of voices that tell you who you are and who you should be. Voices that will tell you that you don't measure up. You need to prove yourself, that you need to buy this thing. You need to have this new experience. You need to hold this opinion. You need to get the right job. You need to attract the right person. You need to lose this much weight. You need to work harder. You need to do better. And that's what defines you. That's what gives you your worth. That's what gives you your identity. But it's a never-ending treadmill of anxiety, and it's a highway to disappointment. But Jesus leads us out of the cycle of anxiety and fear and doubt. It starts by rejecting that doom project of creating your own identity and instead listening to God and accepting His good gift. You don't earn it. He just gives it to you. His free gift of love and a new identity as His child, that His own child, His own son Jesus, died to bring you and give you. And so when we accept Jesus, we can feel free. We can feel free because there's nothing left we need to do. There's nothing left to prove. Because Jesus has done everything. And so we can, day by day, rest in the love of Jesus. We can rest in the love of God rather than being anxious. Because in God's eyes, you matter. You are loved. You're his image. You're his child. And there's nothing greater that you could ever have. And there's nothing greater that you could ever be. Let me pray. Dear God, we praise you as the maker of this world. We praise you that you've created a good world. We thank you that you've made us. And that even though we're like little dots, like little ants in this world, that you still know us, that you still care for us, that you still love us. We're not insignificant, but we're made to reflect and represent you. That you're calling us back to be and live as your child, loving you as our Father, and loving others like brothers and sisters. Help us to know this truth deep in our hearts tonight. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Great. Well, we're going to have a change of gear now, and I'm going to invite Bernard up to the front. Come up here, Bernard. So let's put our hands together for Bernard. It looks like Bernard's been competing in the Women's World Cup today.
Yes, my gender is untouchable.
Great. Welcome along, mate. And thanks for being willing to get up and share your own story and your own journey with your own identity and who you are and why you matter. You have been thinking about this for many, many years. I've known you for 4 or 5 years, and you know, I could see it in your brain just ticking over and over and over and over again. You've only become a follower of Jesus, a Christian, and dedicated your life to following him earlier on this year, which fills my heart with joy. But do you want to tell us about beforehand, so that wrestling over the last 4 or 5 years, and perhaps even longer, how and why was this a struggle for you as a this question of identity about who you are and why you matter?
Sure. Should I use microphone?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. I wasn't quite sure because I've been told I'm very loud. So yes, I've been thinking about this God question for around 5 years before I made, I suppose, the decision. It was really difficult for me because I felt so. I'm a very driven and very intellectual person. I think I think a lot about things, and I love to lose control. I hated the idea of losing control. And I did not like the idea, still struggle with on occasion, giving up control of my life to God, because I do not want God to tell me to be a truck driver. So for example, he's like, oh yes, go and drive a truck. And but I realized, like, it was a real struggle, because even though I had control over my life and I studied hard, worked hard, achieved all my dreams and goals, I found that the finish line moved as yes. I achieved each goal. Like, it was like, finish my law degree, get an honors degree, get a job, be promoted. Those things, the goalposts kept shifting, and I felt like I felt unable to rest.
Yes.
And I appreciated that I was just worshiping my notions of success, that what became my God, and I felt like I didn't have control, because every waking moment I worried about where my career was heading, and that yes. was the only thing that drove me
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And so you found your identity in your work and achievements, which was tied up closely to having control of your life, which is perhaps because you were living for yourself at the end of the day. Mm. And was it, do you think it was, and for you in your experience, was it the listening to the voice of others? Did you feel that pressure from them, or was it more an internal thing that you were following your own heart? Or a mix.
I have high standards, like have and had high standards for where I think I should go.
Yeah.
And other people around me are like surrounded by smart people. People yeah. who choose to be lawyers are very driven and competitive.
Yeah.
And it's a crucible of pressure.
Yes. Yes. So how did that change this year? So you have decided to listen to God, and how has knowing the love of God and knowing Jesus and how he as God's son died for you, how has that changed how you view yourself and now how you live your life?
Sure. I had a few challenging months, and I realized that I think I arrived intellectually in believing God around a year ago, right? So I think I yeah. made that intellectual connection. I just refused to let go of my life.
Sure.
But I realized that I wasn't sleeping. I wasn't resting. I was just working.
Yes.
And I thought to myself, I worship one God. I've already worshiped one God, which is my work. And that's one God that requires a pound of flesh, that requires sacrifice for me. I need to die for this God.
Yes.
I felt like every day I was killing myself for this God of work.
Yes.
And I've been very blessed to be able to listen to Tim Keller on my way to work and every
yeah.
day. And he's got this great sermon that he references in Genesis, right? So God had Abraham tore up pieces of animals. And back in that day, in those days, the human beings would walk through the torn pieces as a way of saying, this is my covenant to you.
Yes.
If I don't follow up what I promised, let me be torn up.
Yes.
But God appeared and walked through the pieces. And at that moment, I realized that if I had to worship something, it might as well be for God that cared for me and
yes.
did not require me to give that pound of flesh.
Wow.
And it just connected in my head that I also don't need to fear necessarily that God would force me to do something I don't want to do, because I guess I had this notion that God would just test me beyond my limits.
Sure.
But I just decided that my limits were, I was at my limit at that point anyway, so might as well
yes.
just give this a shot.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow, that's incredible. And really interesting, you put it a good way that I haven't thought about before. In your own words, you've kind of talked about how work was your identity, it was like your God, and you had to die for it, and you could never rest. But yet now you've turned to God in Jesus. You've turned to a God who died for you so that you can rest and not be anxious every day, but you can sleep, and you can know he loves you rather than having to prove yourself. So that's a phenomenal and profoundly impacting story to hear. So thank you for sharing.
For sure.
And I'm sure you'd be happy to share it with anyone that came up and wanted to know more. But it's hard to get up the front and share your life vulnerably with everyone. So how about we put our hands together and say thanks for Bernard. Oh, thanks, mate. Now, Simon will come up with the mic now, and we're going to have a few moments. How many minutes we got? Let's say 5 minutes for Q&A.
Yep.
An hour, yeah, 5 minutes for Q&A. So are there a few questions that anyone has about anything we've talked about or discussed tonight?
And I'll come to you with the mic.
Yeah.
In our group, we were discussing what does it mean to follow your heart. Like, I guess
yeah.
there's the following desire, which can be viewed as following your heart, but we were also kind of thinking, considering, could following your heart also be a good thing if, I guess, at the center of your heart is the truth, it's God, it's Jesus.
Yes.
And that's kind of that's your compass rather than,
yes.
I guess, this external material possessions and success and all of that.
Yeah. So look, thank you. And I can't say everything in a 7-minute talk, which is what I'm looking for each of the three talks. So God, when he welcomes us back into his family as we put our trust in Jesus, he makes us his own child. But then what he starts to do is to transform our hearts, and he gives us a new heart so that we want to do the right thing. We want to love him. We want to love others. It's not some burden that we have to achieve, but out of knowing his love for us, we're just like, wow, and we just want it to overflow and everyone else to feel that same love. And so he makes us into new loving people, integrated people, and that want to do the right thing in line with the way he made us, the way to love others. And so in that sense, well, if you are living in line with who God truly made you to be, your truly true self, then, yeah, that's a good thing. And so when there's about five ways that when people talk about be true to yourself, there's five ways that they that there's five things that can mean, and they kind of overlap. I only talked about three of them tonight. I talked about the three particularly bad ones. So that was expressing yourself, looking within, and living for yourself. But it can actually mean two other things, and that is to be a person of integrity. So on Lance Armstrong's team, everyone was doping, his whole team, and it was the most sophisticated, I remember reading a quote, it was the most sophisticated cheating scandal in world history. Like, they just went to extraordinary lengths with blood transfusions before and after races to, you know, be able to cheat and win races. But there was one guy on the team. His name was something Basson. That maybe it might have been Chris Basson or someone Basson, Mr. Basson. And he said, no, I'm not going to have to be a part of this. And they pressured him. Even Lance Armstrong came out and publicly tried to undermine him and his character about other things and make him look like a bad person. All the while, they threatened to sack him, and he just stood his ground, Mr. Basson, this cyclist, and he said, no, I don't need to take drugs and win to be a somebody in this world. And in the end, they fired him, and the team fired him, and he was kicked off, and I don't know if he was ever a cyclist again after that. He might have been, but eventually the whole thing blew up. Lance Armstrong and the team were exposed, and he has now, you know, been vindicated and been seen to be a person of integrity. So that can be the fourth way. The fifth way that when people say be true to yourself, sometimes it means, sometimes that they're talking about be a person who cares about social justice and caring for others, which is kind of connected to just loving others, which is what I'm saying God created us for. It's loving vulnerable, disadvantaged, needy people, and which is also connected to kind of being a person of integrity, I think. Rather than living for yourself, you live for others. And so, yeah, look, there can be good things and other nuances that I didn't have time to talk about. So thank you for asking the question. I got to share all five. Jordan.
We do often hear this in the Western culture of being true to yourself and following your heart or your, chasing your dreams. But also, like, we hear from other cultures in the world that sometimes the things that are taught there are things like be true to your family or be true to your culture. How would you respond to that? What is the Bible have to say about, you know, being true to your family or your culture?
Yeah, thank you for the question again. So in one way, again, I tried to spell out the bad side to that in the first talk about sometimes the family can be like the parents or the grandparents can be like the God and whatever they say. So that's listening to others. We can listen to our parents or grandparents, and, you know, if they say you be a doctor, well, that's what you do. Or they say But that can define your whole life. And so your whole life becomes about study and work. And like Bernard, you can end up dying for every day, just becomes having to sacrifice your whole life to live for work or live for money. So that's the bad side of it. The good side of it is, well, God made us to be not just individuals, but to be social beings. And the most immediate sort of relationships we have is with our family, our parents and our children, and until we get married, and then our spouse becomes our most immediate person. But we're still told, so because of our immediate proximity, we have, you know, they're the first people. Our first ministry in life is to love our family. And so there is a right respect and honour and love that we ought to show to them, but they mustn't become, our parents and grandparents or any family or friends or whoever, mustn't become our God who defines us and about who we should be, where we fit and how we ought to live our life. One more question.
So Christianity is the first, like number one religion in the whole world, like which has like 31.5% in the whole world.
And it's the largest global religion, yep.
Largest, which have like 2.2 billion. So having that much of percentage of people who is believing Jesus, why does still evil exist?
Sure. Thank you for the question. And questions about evil and suffering are always the hardest questions, I think, because there's no perfect answer this side of heaven. You're right. More people in the world identify as Christian than any other religion. And so I would also argue that Christianity has had the largest influence on the world compared to any other religion or philosophy or force. So, and if you look where Christianity has had the biggest impact, which is in the, like we talked about last week, when we look at social justice, where it's had, where Christianity, Bible-believing Christianity has flourished the most, it has had the biggest impact for good. So I said last week, in Australia, 23 out of the top 25 largest charities in Australia are Christian. You know, countries like Britain, America, Australia, New Zealand, Canada have had been the most prosperous countries, the most peaceful countries, the most had the most just legal systems. We've had the best healthcare. We've had, and the list just goes on and on and on and on. We've had the best schools. We've had the best, and it's because I think, you know, those, the influence of the Bible to has the has helped align people and how they live, and that's helped whole cultures, those whole societies to flourish the most. Having said that, sometimes of those, you know, let's just say there's 2 billion people that identify as Christian, like in Australia, 50% on the census that we have once every 5 or 10 years, 50% of Australians identify as Christians, but only 5% go to church. So it might be that only 5% are genuine, authentic Christians, and 45% are Christians only in name only. And so they say they're Christian. They say, yeah, I follow God, but then they live like the culture and they live, they're just following their heart, living according to the secular religion. So it could be that across the world, that even though Christianity is the largest religion, that not all Christians are either genuinely Christian or consistently Christian. And so the other thing is that Jesus, the way Jesus' kingdom works is by persuasion and often in hidden kind of ways. Jesus' kingdom doesn't come by guns and by force. And so, you know, often the people that do get to the top have got there by force, and so they cause a lot of problems for the world. But at the end of the day, it'll be Jesus who comes back and finishes what says enough is enough. He will wipe out evil and suffering and create a new world where we will all love God perfectly and love one another perfectly. And that's the Christian hope. We're waiting for Jesus, not only to take away our sin, not only to take away the penalty of sin like he did when he came the first time, to not only take away the penalty, but also take away the presence of evil and suffering when he returns a second time.
Thanks, Sam. I'll finish up there. Thank you.